Welcome to Narratology. Each episode will offer unique insights and perspectives from people countering the narrative. We seek to tell stories that bring a critical lens to the events shaping our present and our past. We will bring activists, artists, influencers, advocates, and innovators to you, and together engage in powerful discussions. I'm your host, Charles Stevens. Hello, everyone. I'm Charles Stevens, your host. And this show, I'm really excited because I'm being joined with one of my closest friends, just someone I admire, someone I've had the opportunity and really blessing to know for about 5 years. And our paths crossed at a really interesting time, I think, in both of our lives. But I'm joined with Dr. Ashley Coleman Taylor, which I say with pride, because I had the opportunity to bear witness to her journey and her process and in her work. And, you know, I ain't gonna lie. You know, I often say that, and how do I put this? Oh, I'm just gonna say it. I struggle with a lot of academics in terms of how they show up in the world.
Understandable.
But I think Ashley just always has so much integrity and just so much commitment and passion. I ride with her wherever. So, hey, Ashley.
Hey, Charles.
Tell us about yourself. I said a little bit, but tell us about yourself.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here. So a little bit about me. I have referred to myself before as a daughter of the city. I'm born and raised right here in Atlanta. Charles and I actually share the special honor of being Atlanta Public School graduates. I have been living in the city the majority of my life, and currently am kind of doing an oral history project on the city with Black LGBT elders. So my own personal story, my own personal history with the city dates back to my grandparents. They moved to Atlanta with their family in early 70s. A couple of my aunts and uncles graduated high school here, actually graduated from either Harper High or Archer. I believe it was Harper High.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. My auntie graduated. My uncle went to Morehouse for a minute, and my brother went to Morehouse. I went to Spelman. So my grandfather actually was a doctor. He worked at Grady for many years. He was an OBGYN there, delivered a lot of Black babies, a lot of babies in the city. My mother was also, she was a doctor here. She was a pediatrician. So my parents actually moved here in the late 70s, right after my sister was born. My father has been the city attorney for Atlanta under Maynard Jackson. You know, I see myself not just someone in the city, but actually of the city, right? And so that's why I call myself a daughter of the city. I'm deeply rooted here, have recently moved to Austin, Texas to take a job, but still very much see myself as rooted in the city. My family is here. My wife is also from the city and works at the CDC. So my wife also moves here, so she's kind of back and forth. Even though, you know, we have moved elsewhere, we're still both very rooted here in Atlanta. Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Along with being a daughter of the city, In some ways I see you as giving birth to just so many interesting ideas and theoretical frameworks that I'm excited about seeing how they circulate and transform both what's possible in the realm of scholarship and ideas, but also what's possible in the realm of activism and advocacy.
Yeah.
What I'm most excited about, and there are many things I'm excited about with regard to your work. One of the things I'm really excited about is you framing your work in what you call Black Queer Atlanta Studies.
Absolutely.
And part of that is there's an oral history piece to it. There's some other scholarly pieces. Could you just talk a little bit about your, like, what does it mean to anchor your work, your scholarly work, in the city of Atlanta?
Sure. So what I want to first point out is the importance of archiving, right? The importance of collecting stories, the importance of collecting and preserving material culture as well. So in large part, the work that I do with collecting stories from Black LGBT elders in the city is part of that archiving, right? So we are preserving our memories through storytelling and through narrative, which is a very important piece of kind of a not only a Black feminist aspect, a Black feminist framework, but also kind of a queer studies framework. It's kind of situatedness, right? And rootedness in one's individual story and their own perspectives. And I think that the work that I'm doing is particularly important and timely right now because, you know, every time I drive through neighborhoods that I used to live in, we see buildings, historical buildings razed. We see Black populations that used to live there being erased. We see mass displacement, and we see so much of this kind of proliferation of capitalism having a very real impact on the lives of Black Atlanta.
Absolutely. And I grieve the loss of much of that memory. Mm-hmm. I also feel at times isolated in some ways.
Absolutely.
In the sense that there are people that I grew up with or share memories with that no longer can live in the city.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed that I'm still able to live in the city of Atlanta, but it's really hard.
It's hard.
It's hard to get harder every year. Like, I'm actually to the point now where I'm thinking if things stay on track, it's just going to be increasingly difficult. So I really celebrate you for wanting to create a space for those memories. I also say, I mean, I think a lot of times when we think about memories, we think about archives. In some ways, I see myself as an archive in the sense that I had the great pleasure and blessing to meet many movement elders when I was very young and feel like they downloaded some of their memories onto me. And so I feel like in my work, I carry a lot of those memories with me. And that's, I think that's part of how we've intersected both that interest in collective memory.
Sure.
I also want to just get at in your research and just in your travels and your journey, what are some of the really interesting stories about Atlanta that you've come across or people, yeah. places,
yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, what are some just really things that have just fascinated you?
So I do want to point out that I think talking about Black queer Atlanta studies, we are centering place, right? So we're centering Atlanta as Black place, Atlanta as Black site, kind of the situatedness of Blackness that has been affixed to the city since at least the 70s. When Ebony Magazine, there was this kind of, Atlanta was branded the Black Mecca. Right. In this October 1971 issue of Ebony Magazine. And so, you know, we have ever since then, we have this kind of what I call Black migratory praxis of people moving into the city or just moving through the city. Right. So I don't think it's not a coincidence that Atlanta was first named Terminus. Right. So it's a place to come to and then also kind of move away from. It kind of becomes this site where people intersect, land, find themselves, and either stay and continue to build or keep moving. So what keeps coming up in the oral histories, and this could also, of course, be kind of the questions that I'm asking and kind of how I'm asking the questions, a lot of times people start to talk about these particular sites that help to shape their identity and their self-knowledge as queer and trans folks in the city, right? So you have, I hear all these stories about the Marquette, for example, oldest, you know, Black gay club in the South, still around today. I hear Miko Evans kind of telling me the history of the Marquette and when his mama used to frequent there back in the day. And this is kind of before it became this Black gay club that we know it to be today, right? Pat Hussein was telling me about a club that she went to on Cheshire Bridge and kind of how visiting that club actually kind of helped her to discover her own identity and her own sexuality. So most of the stories, the ones that really stand out are kind of around place, around queer place, around Black queer place and space in particular, and kind of how these social spaces help people to discover and solidify who they kind of knew inwardly to be, right?
You talked about archives and queer archives. What are two or three things that people would find in the Ashley Coleman Taylor archive?
Oh, goodness. You know what? My archive, and I'm collecting my papers now just in case anybody's ever interested, because we never really know if anybody's going to be interested, right? But so much of the work that I do comes from who I am. So in my archive, you will see a lot of papers about Black women in Puerto Rico. You will see a lot of things about kind of Black queer folks in Atlanta, things I've saved over the year, things I've written down. So my other project is on Blackness, gender, sexuality, and coloniality in Puerto Rico, which emerges also from kind of my own family background, my own history. So my archive will just kind of be a glimpse into the ways that my work is informed by my positionality and my own familial history.
Are there any final things you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I do want to talk about the importance of archiving. There is, first of all, a severe lack of queer archives. There is a lack of specifically Black, queer, and trans archives. I do want to say archives are always political and kind of what people collect and deem as important and worthy of being saved is a very political concept. But I do just want to let people know that archiving is crucial to our memories, our families' memories, and for generations to come to know that we were here and that we existed. And when I say archiving, I don't just mean kind of putting things in a box and giving them to an institution, particularly private institution. I am a proponent for public institutions and public collecting. They become more accessible spaces for people. But archiving is also about storytelling and collecting stories and collecting family stories and listening to what, you know, Meemaw has to say. And what does Meemaw know about her grandmother? And, you know, what does your auntie remember about your great-grandfather, right? Like, these are all important histories that need to be preserved.
I've had such amazing experiences in archives as an activist. So I'm the activist in the archive. And so two experiences I want to share. One is going to the San Francisco Public Library and looking through the papers of Gary Fisher. Gary Fisher was a writer. He died in the 90s. He was about 28 or 29, I believe. He was a graduate student at UC Berkeley. And he's most known for a book that came out after he died called Gary in Your Pocket. And it was a collection of his journals and some short stories. What I've always found really critical about Gary Fisher is, you know, he's, to my knowledge, one of the few Black gay men living with HIV in the 90s that actually, where there's actually first person, like he has these journals where he's like narrating those experiences. In his papers, you see letters. So this is basically when he's in a hospital and he's dying, essentially. And so he's in a hospital and he's trying to create poetry and he's writing poetry. He's trying to create art. Like here he is on his deathbed and he's still trying to create. And he's writing letters to Eve Sedgwick, you know, asking her to get him a computer. Like, it was just this really extraordinary experience. And it, for me, helped clarify the stakes of what I do as a cultural worker and as an activist. And it also helped me see so very clearly the shoulders that I stand on. And I'm always a fan of academics, certainly scholars, but also cultural workers and artists. Like, we all need to be community members. So we all need to be in the archives because it is such an important space. Thank you, Dr. Ashley Coleman-Taylor, for joining us on Black Gay Mecca.
Thank you.
I'm Charles Stevens. Thank you for joining us. Please remember to follow the Counter Narrative Project on Twitter at Building Desire, on Facebook and Instagram at The Counter Narrative. Thank you.